what peer support means is using the relationships that we have as a system that encourages positive possibilities. To use that network to get the positive results that we would hope. Started this program 2 years ago when Augustana Lutheran Church put together a program as a response to gangs and drugs and the realities that were impacting youth in North and Northeast Portland. And as that program was developed, the funding for that, I was called in as a pastor to do that ministry. The funding for the program comes all from outside sources, and so I not only develop the program and implement the program, but I also have to raise the resources for that program, just to give you some background. Before I talk about the realities of this specific program of gangs and drugs and how a lot of that developed, I'd like to just give you an idea of how the program works. So I have a videotape that's about 7 minutes.
Crime, gang violence, murder, all too often they intrude on everyday life in many parts of Portland. One group took advantage of the holiday season to bring some relief to a group of children, as Paul Gallen reports.
The sounds of this season, from the children of some of Portland's meanest streets, kids who all too often live with other sounds. In neighborhoods like this one, violence seems a way of life at times. The volunteers who run the community project for at-risk youth are trying to give these kids something else. And new friends. At-risk kids paired with senior class members from Oregon Episcopal School. Students like Erica Legler and her new friend, Carla Billington.
I just think it's really good for the kids in summer because they don't have as fortunate as us. And so it's just really neat, I think, that the whole school is able to get together and do this.
Truly to celebrate the diversity that exists here in Northeast Portland. You know, kids that come from all over the world, every ethnic background, and it's just a wonderful opportunity to bring in youth together.
And to give them a future, give them some hope.
I know I'm inspired by seeing what's happened through the kids and what they put together, and it can only instill hope in the youth who are here today, and to see that by the looks on their faces.
And isn't that what this season is really all about? In Northeast Portland with photographer Morris Banks. Paul Young, Newsroom 6.
As gangs and gang violence become a way of life for some Portland children, many are doing what they can to teach kids a different way of life. The Jim Hyde reports the Northeast Portland volunteers are doing their part with a program called Kids at Risk.
And celebrating at Redeemer Lutheran Church in Northeast Portland is deliberately multiracial today. The community Christmas party pairs 100 students from the Oregon Episcopal School in Southwest Portland with young people from the city's north and northeast side. Although a young man was killed in a gang fight just a few blocks from here on Wednesday, this party is part of a campaign to celebrate life for kids growing up in the neighborhood.
What people hear about the Northeast community is often, you know, the bad news. But there's wonderful diversity here. The kids are loving. It's just a matter of having a supportive place for all those wonderful parts of, you know, the human being to come out.
Students from Jefferson High helped too, as did volunteers from the community youth at risk programs. But the scope was not limited to this city or country. Among the newest residents of the party, this family emigrated from Russia just last month. The volunteers on this project say they have no grand theory about what causes a child to be at risk. They work with people as individuals. But if that risk comes from crime, drugs, or an affinity for gangs, that's where the attention is focused. But everyone can benefit from a community Christmas.
Here, we got a couple things for you right now, okay?
There's a gift for every one of the youngsters.
There we go.
But much of what they share with their partners today is intangible and invaluable.
Merry Christmas.
It is just a lot of fun. Sunday is really nice. It's a great band to kind of the different kids. And I wish I wasn't a senior because then I could do it more next year, but oh well.
You've been having fun together this morning?
Uh-huh. Walking in the light, you see for life.
In Northeast Portland, Jim Hyde, Channel 2 News.
Almost no one has more influence over a little kid than a bigger kid. And today, kids from Jefferson High School and the Oregon Episcopal School took some young ones under their wing for a Christmas celebration. This gathering at Redeemer Lutheran Church in inner Northeast Portland brought together the high school students and young low-income children from the neighborhood. This is the second year for this Christmas party, which was organized to help provide good role models and build self-esteem in so-called high-risk children. This is a big boost at the party.
Okay, I just want to share that as a way of introduction to the program, and that there are a number of programs that we have or projects that really build on the same kind of presentation that we're fortunate to be able to show you through the media. I want to begin by asking you a question that I really like. And if you know the answer, please give it. There's a saying, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. How do you get a horse to drink water? Make him thirsty. Great.
Give him salt.
Yeah. Give him salt. I thought that was so wonderful when I heard that. Yeah. I mean, it's such a simple answer to what seems like a complicated question. And what does the Bible tell us that we are to be?
Salt of the earth.
Yeah. And that, for me, that's a wonderful framework to look at this program and our ministry. And that we are the salt of the earth. You know, we're that salt that causes people to want to come and drink. And that's really what the peer support program is all about, is bringing people to a place where they can be fed. And the children of this program really do thirst. And so what we always try to do is look at their needs in ways that we can say the church or caring people can lead those children from those very negative lifestyles, the destructive lifestyles that they're subjected to. To begin with the problem and how the whole risk factors of youth, and to begin, all youth are at risk. I mean, that's a reality in today's world. If we look at the media and we look at how our children, our youth, are just bombarded with their values and morals, and everything is just swamped. And I'd like to ask you what some of the ways, just to get your identity in this, of what are some of the ways that our children are at risk? I mean, you see it in your communities. So I'd like to solicit, just brainstorming, just.
They're at risk to be sexist based on all of the advertisement that goes on.
Okay, sexism.
Drugs.
Drugs.
Booze.
Pardon?
Booze.
Alcohol, drugs.
Yeah.
Violence. Violence. What kind of violence?
Drive-by shootings.
Drive-by shootings. Yeah.
Just the kind of stuff that goes out of school, picked on. Stuff that starts out small.
Right. Okay, now it sounds like focusing on the city, kind of the urban. It's not just there. What are some of the risk factors in your community as well? Cultural.
Single parent.
Let's stick with cultural just for a second. Let's name it. What?
Our population has 29%.
Apathy.
Pure influence.
Materialism.
Yeah.
Abuse.
Child abuse. Mm-hmm. Great. One that I think is really important to name it. And I don't mean to subject you to this, but if you're not going to say it, I will. Racism and sexism. Great. To be concrete about this and how we even had saw this problem enough to work with the highest at risk youth is the gang problem, gang and drugs. And in Portland, it became a tremendous problem about 4 or 5 years ago that we had to do something, and foundations responded, and that's part of why this program even came into existence. And August Santa Church, in relationship with those foundations, developed this program. But the reality of it is gangs and drugs. And looking at that point again about how you get a horse to water and feeding it salt, that gang leaders and drug lords were very astute, and that they were looking at the reality that how could they make more profit? You know? So they were actually, like, we're sitting down and discussing now, they sat down as if though they were in a board meeting and said, how can we market so that we can make more profit? Where can we you know, sell more drugs? And they looked at the reality that in our urban areas, in our cities, that Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts, Boys Clubs, Girls Clubs, those institutions where we grew up with those as support systems for us, churches as well, that as those institutions tended to leave the city and those resources were gone, that the needs of children were still there. And the needs of youth are still there. And so what they did is they looked at urban areas where those resources for youth are gone, and they established clubs, if you will, gangs. And so in urban areas, they would send their leaders down, and they would rent a house or buy a house, and they'd just make that a clubhouse where, you know, kids could come in and hang out, drink, develop that relationship, which really met the needs of those youth and developed a very important part of their attachment and their bond in those houses. That's how gangs started. So that if you look at from Los Angeles to Vancouver, Washington, just name some of the places where there's tremendous gang activity. Los Angeles, Oakland, Sacramento, Portland, Tacoma, Seattle, and Vancouver. I mean, that's the I-5 corridor, the highway. And all they had to do is get on that highway and go straight through and establish those gangs. And where we're critical of gangs for doing that, we also need to also be critical of ourselves for taking those resources away. In Portland, we have Measure 5 where we've done a tax cut in order for us to have more money, which is really impacting our schools. And again, those resources are being taken away from our children. Another thing, that political statement that I would make is President Bush is coming out with this very eloquent plan for the year 2000, which is really focusing our resources on testing and doing research. But none of that supports youth. I mean, all of that goes into, you know, doing more research, but what testing for children and people of color? I just really wanted to caution you of where does that benefit those children, those most at-risk children? How does testing benefit them? There's another story aside to that is, I believe it was in the 50s that there were, you would see many black jockeys, you know, doing horses, and probably the majority of jockeys were black. The way that they did is they instituted a test. I'm not certain if it was a test or they required, it was a test. And now, since they've instituted that test, there are very few black jockeys. Okay. The point is to look at what does that test provide for people of color?
More specifically, what does the test do in dealing with mental retardation? Does the test actually get the information of the person's ability, or is the test itself the stumbling block and it's really what's your ability to take a test?
Thank you. So again, the point that I'm trying to make here is focusing on the needs of the youth of our community. And, you know, that is another important example. Another thing that goes along with that is there's an extremely high proportion of African-American at-risk youth who are in special education. And that has much more, that is not solely a result of their intellectual capabilities. But that's just a part of the bombardment that I want you to know. I want to share about risk factors with children. And so I just mentioned that as an aside. But to also know that there are those elements in our society that if we're not going to focus on our youth and provide positive alternatives for them, there are elements in our society that are focusing on our youth to exploit them. How do you get a horse to water? Are there any questions so far? And I'm really comfortable with you challenging any of this. Okay. Well, thank you. Now, beyond, we've talked to that kind of global picture that all youth are at risk. We talked about marketing and how there are those negative factors that are doing a better job at it than we are. Now, looking specifically at the peer ministry model and who the children are that we work with. In our communities, I work primarily with a church. It's not my church, but it's a church in the community that happens to be Lutheran, that is in an area that's called Crack Alley. And it's called Crack Alley because that's one of the areas where the highest concentration of selling crack cocaine is. And just an example of that is, well, there are a couple of stories I could tell, but when I take children home, sometimes I forget about that reality. And I'll take a kid home and I'll drop her off, and this might be an 8-9-year-old child. And then on my way home, as I stop at stop signs following the law, I'm accosted by people trying to sell me crack cocaine. And one of my feelings is fear as this person walks up to my car and approaches me. And I want to be kind of cool because I want to relate to the community or the neighborhood as well. And so I don't want to just come off as this judgmental person. But the other side of it is I really do have a very negative judgment. I feel like I cannot even drive through a neighborhood without someone coming up and trying to sell me a drug, a destructive drug. That's the reality that these kids and their parents live in daily. So, and who the people are, who the children are, who are most at risk in this neighborhood. They're predominantly African American and they're poor. There's a high number of Russian immigrants. They live in that community because they've just settled in the United States. They can get cheaper rent. And so they're in that neighborhood and they're victimized because they're of a culture and they're just coming to a new country. And they see the American kids as very aggressive, and they don't know how to relate. And so they have a very docile way of relating in the community. So one of the things that we try to do with the program with them is bring them into relationship with the kids of the community, the other kids of the community, so that they can see that that behavior isn't personal, and that the kids can begin to develop some relationship. And one of the ways that we do that is we've started a choir at that church where the children meet every week. My wife happens to be the director of that choir. Every week those children meet for 2 hours and they have a rehearsal, they have a snack, and then about once a month they go on activities where they'll go to the zoo or the circus and things like that. That choir has been going for about a year and a half. And beginning in April, they've had requests to go to congregations or to civic groups to sing. Most of the kids that you saw on that videotape were children in that choir. So that's been a very successful one of bringing children who have this stigma of being disposable youth and putting them in a position where they're performing and they see people like yourselves applauding them. And they're not doing that superficially. Like last night's choir, they're really touched by seeing what these children are doing as the grace of God is coming through that experience. So that's just one of the ways using that peer model. Another program that we have, I'll just go through the programs and some of the peer relationship, how it works. I work with, I've developed a chess activity club at a middle school. And I use chess activity to help with the critical thinking skills for these children, and also as a means for me having a relationship with those youth. Beyond that, when those youth come together, you know, for a fun activity, they're developing relationships with other youth. And that's a powerful piece of what happens with the program, is there are a lot of kids who live in high risk factors, and they don't know who they can relate to, much like the example of the Russian children. When I bring those youth together with other youth, they begin to be able to identify who are other kids who have, you know, some family values in their home that are trying to have a positive place to relate. So that as those kids relate in that school environment, they're able to go home and relate to themselves and their neighborhood. So that's a real important one of providing a positive structure for kids to develop new relationships. And that often doesn't happen in school when they're with so many peers and there's more conflict and competition. Every month we take 8 to 10 youth to the Western Culinary Institute. The Western Culinary Institute is a school where adults pay about $12,000 a year to become chefs, and it takes 2 years for them to fulfill that commitment. And that restaurant, every 5 days a week, is open, and people pay $15 to $18 to come in for a 6-course meal. Well, I went to the owner of that restaurant and approached him about inviting our children to come in and them to sponsor a meal for them. Well, the owner wouldn't do that, but he did agree to do that at cost. So for $5 per meal, we're able to bring 8 to 10 youth in for a 6-course meal. And we always have role models from the community come in, adult role models, to go through that meal with them. So we've had role models, former Portland Trail Blazers, the best team in the NBA. take our fancy. We've had doctors and lawyers, salespeople. We've had, there's a person, his name is, I can't think, Ron Steen. He's the premier jazz drummer in our metropolitan area. We've had Calvin Walker, another of the top band leaders, come. And role models for these kids to go through that 6-course meal. And it isn't an accident that we went to a restaurant to have these kids go through a 6-course meal. The discipline of that is wonderful. But the other thing about it is that it's building on the tradition of the church. You know, that we recognize that eating together is essential. And that by eating together, it's not something that's done in separation from the rest of the world. Eating is essential to life. Everybody does it. Another piece about the Eating for Etiquette program is that it's something that volunteers can do. I mean, a lot of times there's an anxiety level for volunteers of saying, being able to say, I don't know if I can do that. Every adult knows how to eat. And most of us, if you don't know the etiquette, you can fake it, at least more than a kid. And we always have an orientation to you know, what all the knives and forks and all the, you know, the ritual of 6-course dining is about. That program has been extremely successful. Yesterday I mentioned that when I go back, I have a restaurant owner, Wilf's Restaurant, is a 5-star restaurant, and the owner of that restaurant has invited me to bring in 25 kids, and she's going to train them as waiters and waitresses on a Saturday. And then on that Sunday, they'll be able to bring their parents in, and they will serve their parents the meal. I have to be cautious even when I say their parents, because many of our kids don't live with their parents. There's a large majority of them that live with their grandmother. Their mother or their father's not in the home. There's a high level of prostitution, drug addiction, and incarceration. So a lot of these kids, the anchor of their home is their grandmother. And a lot of them live with their grandmother. They've either been adopted or they're in foster care. But when I say inviting their parents, a lot of times it isn't their birth parents that they're able to bring to be with them for that meal. But the important thing is that these kids, again, are able to go from this point of being the victims to being able to have something to offer. And that's, I'm extremely excited about that, and every time we do that. Another powerful part about the peer relationship is that it's not only a peer relationship, youth with youth, but the church and the community. And that's a powerful model as well, that the church is in relationship with the community, and the business person is in relationship with the leadership that exists within the church. We have a Saturday gym program where each spring, Parks and Recreation sponsors a gym program where they open the gym up, and there's 100 to 200 African-American male youth that are involved in that gym. And those are the most at-risk youth in Portland or in any community. And much of that, as mentioned, has to do with racism and other factors. Now, these youth, in the spring, Parks and Recreation does not fund that program. And in one of my meetings in the school, I was told about that situation, and it was a powerful thing when we were able to say, the church will pick that up for the remainder of the year. That had a tremendous power within the community, for them to hear a church that didn't just talk, but produced. So that's powerful. I can't express enough the impact of that. So each year now, we sponsor that Saturday gym, and that's 100 to 200 African-American male youth. Just a story about that. For my recreation, I go to Salvation Army to try to play basketball, and the operative word there is try. So one of my experiences in that is I was playing basketball, and there were a couple of youth that were there who were on the high school championship basketball team, and they were just involved in a pickup game, and I was playing. And we happened to win the first game, and this one tall kid came up to me, and he said, you know, kind of pushing me off the court, said, aren't you tired? Don't you want me to take your place? And I put up my strongest bravado, and I said, no, I'm fine. I'm, you know, and I just kind of gave it back to him. And I managed to go through that next game. And it was so wonderful for me when I walked into the gym and this tall kid saw me, and he was like a little child running to his buddy. He said, hey, Matt, he's a minister, man, he's a minister. And the shock and the excitement. And so, you know, just breaking that stereotype in their mind and being able to relate, have that relationship again for these kids to see that the church is involved in their lives. My goal for the Saturday gym program is to work with pastors in the African-American community to get them to come into the gym, and whether they're playing basketball or just being there, to reestablish that relationship. This is a really sad reality for these youth, in that these pastors that they used to go to their church when they were children, and now because of having their gang house or the places to go that the church isn't a part of, to be able to have a relationship with those clergy again, or those pastors, those church people, so that it's safe for those kids to go back into the church, because the church is involved in their lives. The sad reality about that is that those kids do still go back into those churches, but it's only for a funeral, because a kid has been shot or killed because of a gang. And so to bring that back into that positive relationship is a very strong goal for this program. We started at the same school. We did a project this year for 6 weeks where we started an after-school computer program to do homework. And that involved two of the teachers volunteering their time, a teacher from Oregon Episcopal School that you saw in the videotape, and I'll get back to that. And two volunteers from the community. It was wonderful. The way we got the kids is I went through the counselor in the school, and they gave us 20 of the kids who had flunked math but showed good attendance. So it showed that they were trying. So we invited those youth to the computer program, and it started off that we had 12 kids to come. And it grew each week as that program went on. And there was no kind of pressure. It's all volunteer on the part of those kids. And there was one grandfather that came in each time with his daughter. There was a mother that came in with her daughter. And there were two more volunteers from the community that came in to participate in that program. And that program didn't cost us anything except a trip that we promised the kids at the end of the school year. Now this year we will have to pay for that program because we'll have to pay for an anchor staff to do that. But just to look at the number of volunteers and how the church is able to bring these people and these youth into relationship. We have a female support group, and this is another one where my wife is very involved, where we have 10 women who serve as volunteers to be mentors to females. A lot that we hear about gangs and responses, we talk about the males, but there are a lot of females who are involved in these high-risk factors as well. And so the female support group is also there. And these are professional women. My wife has her doctorate in education administration. We have a CPA, we have an archaeologist, and we have other professional women as well that are volunteering their time to be role models for these girls. The Christmas party. When this program began, funding was a real problem. All we had was enough money for my salary. We don't even have that much now. I haven't been paid for July yet. But when I came, prefaces, when I came to Oregon, I came to teach at Oregon Episcopal School, which is an affluent school, and it does a wonderful job of preparing children for their future. But there are children who already have tremendous promise in their lives. I'm fortunate to have a very good relationship with that school. The first year I came to the program, I went to the residence department. I used to be the director of their dormitories, and invited 40 children to put on a Christmas party for 40 of the children that participated in Redeemer Lutheran Church's Vacation Church School. We did that, and at that party, there were 180 children involved in that. So then this last year, I went to the entire upper school, and there's only about 230 students in the upper school. I went to the upper school and asked for 100 volunteers to put on a Christmas party for 100 students at the Redeemer Church Vacation Program. At that time, we had 100 children, and at this event, we had over 300 participating in the Christmas program. Now, when I say for them to sponsor it, really, we did all the work as adults, but I really wanted to empower the kids that they're the ones who are making this happen. And so what the kids did is they wrote to each other. The OES students bought a gift, a $5 gift for their partner, and then the kids were matched up as we came together for that event. And then I had adults that volunteered their time by putting on the lunch. We had a professional puppet troupe. We had a local children's choir come in from a grade school. So that's how the Christmas program happened. And we see that as an annual event. I did a program this summer that unfortunately didn't get the response from the children that I'd helped, particularly of the congregation. And this is my congregation, Augustana. We started a reading program called the Reading Train. And the object of that was to have kids come in for 2.5 hours each weekday and just spend time reading. And I was fortunate in that I had 9 volunteers, youth volunteers, and 3 of them are in college. And they volunteered their time to just come in and be mentors for these kids in using reading and to reinforce those reading skills for children. We didn't get the response of the children to come in for the program, so we ended that program, but we'll do it next year and do a better job of marketing that because we didn't get the response for the kids. But I see that as a really valuable program. That's basically the list of programs, but I hope that you can see that this model is to bring youth together, looking at their needs, and I guess to be more specific about that and the approach that I see with peer relationships is that beginning with the church, in particular in Protestant churches, that mainline Protestant churches, youth groups have been a really important part of our identity. That we've seen the value in youth, and we've always put our resources into youth through youth groups. And so we make sure that there's organization there's some resources, and we support youth through that way. And in the Lutheran Church, we even have a national director for youth ministries. And locally, we have other ways of making sure that expression is there. That is a recognition of the fact that youth develop their own cultural identity. And it's critical that we not only recognize that, but that we support that. And that it's an important part of adolescence to develop antisocial behavior. And that's to say that youth need a time when they say to mom and dad or to adults, I need my own space, I need to develop my own identity, and a certain amount of that is healthy. And so what we need to do is structure a way that youth can experiment with that antisocial behavior in a way that it's not destructive behavior. So that youth can go out and through youth groups or boys clubs, girls clubs, scouting, that's a time where youth develop their own identity, their own culture. And we have to do that in a way that's supportive and leads youth toward positive, constructive adulthood. So that's the background of the peer support network. And what I'd like to do is entertain any questions or responses about that. And also, I very much entertain your vision, your peer relationship in regard to finances, because that's, again, a very important piece of the program, and your power. And one other exciting piece of the program that has occurred since I've been at Holden, Verlon Brown, the village chaplain, and Scott, I can't think of Scott's last name right now.
Hasserud,
the director of Holden, had invited me to bring some youth here from the program to Holden. And so either in September or in the spring, I'll be bringing 15 youth here to experience Holden and nature, and I'll be bringing mentors in to have that kind of relationship. And so we're very fortunate to have this kind of setting to make that happen. But that wouldn't have happened if people hadn't looked at the program, not from a subjective way, but kind of looking at relationship again. And that whole perspective of peer relationship is critical to making this happen. So with that, I kind of throw this out for your response, and yes?
So your salary wasn't paid in July. Who is going to pay it? Where do you get paid from?
Well, as you can tell, I'm not shy about presenting the program and the need, and I feel confident that as I do that, God and I will come up with something. It will happen.
So there's no solid, there's no steady source of income. It's just from sporadic donations?
It's sporadic donations. I'm appealing to the women of the ELCA and our Senate. I go out to congregations regularly to share this ministry and to develop relationship. The problem is that I haven't been doing this for 2 years. So this is a relatively new part of the program. And since early March, I've been trying to develop that kind of relationship, the network for funding. Let me just finish. And the reason for that is I'd always written to foundations, assuming that foundations would support the program. And it took a while for me to find out that foundations say, you show me your local support, and if that's there, then we'll match. But they don't just throw money out there. They need to see that there's ownership within the community. As wonderful as any program is, you know, they need to see local ownership in order for them to put their support into it. Yes?
A little more base to work from. Your church is Augustana Church?
Yes.
That's a building somewhere. That's not a synod, that's a building?
Correct.
Okay. But you work at Redeemer Lutheran.
You
wear many hats. So yeah. I'm wondering, where do you start from? What's your base?
Okay. My base, there are two realities. Well, my base are the children. I began with Oregon Episcopal School because I knew that sharing a vision that I would get a response. That's very much based on relationship. If I didn't have the credibility that I had there when I was a teacher, it wouldn't have made any difference for me to go there and talk about the program. So the relationship is the foundation. That's where I began, first of all. Then I, Jefferson High School, the only inner city school in Oregon. I'm there regularly as a volunteer and serve on all kinds of committees there. Then I go to Holy Redeemer Catholic School, which is also in a very much at-risk community. And 50% of their student body are high risk. So I volunteer there as a counselor, and I involve many of their children in all of these programs. So those are the basis for program. Augustana is my base of where I'm called out of. But that's about the extent of that relationship. You know, I preach there. Does that answer your question?
Somewhat. They don't have a salary position for you?
No, they don't. And, you know, part of that reality is that it's an urban church, and, you know, they have constraints just based on the environment. Another piece of it is just as managerial or vision. And, you know, there's a lot of work that my congregation, Augustana, needs to do, and a lot of shortcomings in relation to the program. A lot of other congregations have responded far better than my own congregation. That's a reality. Yes.
One of the things that we could do here that's, I think, very concrete and very doable, and that is for each of us to go to our home congregation and ask for $500. $500 for most congregations is going to be either very big or very small. And if it's a very small number, chances of getting it are pretty good. If it's a very big number, talk them down to $100. Talk them down to $10. Talk them down to $1. But get them to write a check for at least $1 and send it off in support, so that from that $1, Kelly knows that there's a seed crystal of support out there, even if they're not able to do a big financial thing right now. $1. The political parallel is that any office seeker who can get any voter to contribute $1 to the campaign will almost certainly get that person's vote. But some of us might be able to get $500, some $100, some 20, I believe any of us could get $1 and to send that money.
Yeah. Just to share with you where I'm coming from, I'm a busy person, and you should be able to see that from this program. But if you give to this program, that's wonderful. And if you don't, that's fine. Because I'm going to keep moving, and I'm going to keep going until I find people that do. So I'm not just here to get your money. The vision is the connection, and I appreciate that. But peer ministry is also something you can do in your community. There are maybe programs that are doing things in your community that you can respond to. But my primary thing is that I'm sharing with you the vision. And the secondary one is that if you find that you identify with this program and you want to or you can support it, that's great. But I just want to be careful to share. I'm not here to beg. I'm not about begging, because I really am hooked into a power here. And what's happening in this program is powerful. And so either you see it or you don't, either you can or you can't. And you may already have things that you're doing in your community, so it's not an either or. But I just really don't want to give a sense that I'm begging.
Because I'll beg for you.
Well, that's fine, but yes.
If we wanted to do, I feel like we write checks pretty easily, but if we wanted to get a more hands-on approach, we happen to be from Portland. Are there needs for a bunch of white people?
Yeah, that's a really important point, and that there are times when there are needs and there are times when there aren't. It's like the Christmas program. If that was a bunch of white adults, I would really be cautious of putting that on. But because they're children relating to other children, I'm really prepared and promote that confrontation ethnically. Because if our kids don't begin to relate someplace, affluent and poor, black and white, then when they become adults, they're going to be playing out the same tapes that we're playing out. So that's a confrontation that I'm more than happy to take on. But in relationship to what we can do as adults in relationship to coming into community, I have to be a lot more careful, because these children need to get the vision, the experience that their parents are not all victims, but they have something to contribute. So many times the check is the most appropriate thing. The trip to Holden, inevitably that will be a time when I will be using white volunteers, because I don't know of any people of color that have the time to take off of work. And a lot of us don't have the experience of Holden either. So that's another really important connection. Yes?
I was thinking, there's so many levels of engagement that one can, according to which you bring up. Some years ago here, Mary Schramm presented the idea of evoking gifts. And for me, that was 10 years ago. And I found that in sharing that message with particularly women in Canada at retreats and different places, that it filled a real vacuum and need for them and their own self-esteem and their own maybe stifled creativity, and that all of a sudden they realized, I may be the person who makes the best coffee, I may be the person that has the money right now, I may be the person that can rock a baby, I may be the person that can make muffins and send it to the school for people. And just sparking that within individuals, the same thing happens with children. And we too have a special, we have a Lutheran private school in our town. And so many times, don't you just feel frustrated when globally, all over the world, we see these needs? What can I do? You want to say send me, but goodness, I have three children and I'm here within my own community, and you want to help. And I found that programs as simple, you relate on a basketball level. My husband relates that way on a weightlifting level. I know a guy in Washington, D.C. that made model airplanes and simply was at the park and children. And I think I'm skipping around here, but the vision for us is our faith and faith presented. And if we're past the time when we can sit nicely, and I think we all know this, within our congregations and say, well, I really feel bad about that, and take it out of my pocket. Some of us are able to do that. And it's almost a selfish experience, because as these things come forth within us, And we look to our own communities, and that's not to say we put on blinders to the rest of the world, but it has to begin someplace, like that. And people begin to realize the strength and the power of the faith within when they have these kinds of channels that they are giving through the very talents that God has placed. They awaken to those things within them, and boy, it becomes... your computer club, drama clubs, choirs are the greatest thing. But sometimes it's just a simple touch of letting many know that, boy, your coffee is sure appreciated.
Yeah.
And you just get, every time you meet somebody, you look for that potential within them. And rather than thinking, oh, our pastor can handle that, or we've got a committee for this, or whatever, making people realize that no gift is too small. And every gift is needed. And that was an exciting thing for me some years back, and it's been growing since then. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no, thank you. And what you're stating helps me to remember, to remind all of us, that while we're thinking about the best way for us to do, or the nicest way, or the way that we won't offend people and things like that, there are gang leaders and drug lords and people that are looking at our children and exploiting them. And so I would say we have our job to do. And, so we do need to look at our gifts, and we do need to look at how we are the salt and how, you know, we can lead people. And, you know, and I say this specifically because this is my passion right now, I'm working with these children. But you need to have your own passion and your own ministries within your communities. Well, I do have a youth board of directors, and that is really helpful. But that also demands a lot of energy, too, because it's somewhat of a misnomer because it's an educational process as much as what they have to give. So that's a recognition of the empowerment needs of the kids. But most of these kids, it's really buying back into their culture. It's buying into the relationship. And my experience is we need to do that by presenting something where we're able to be in relationship. The example, again, of the gym is that when I walk into that gym and I see those kids playing basketball and I hear that music, I know that that's their culture. You know, and I can't walk in and say, okay, my turn, or I'm the adult and, you know, you follow me. I have to sit and listen. Just being present. And from that, discerning, you know, what their needs are. That's the way that I listen to kids, is by just being with them. And then from that, they'll tell you. Another thing we do is, and this is another benefit of my relationship with Oregon Episcopal, they have an indoor racquetball club and tennis facility. And so on occasion, we're able to take kids there for an overnight where they can just spend their energy running and playing and being in relationship. You know, that's another way of listening to the kids. And then at the end of those, invariably, kids say what they want to do next. You know, and if I take kids here to Holden or to the beach, on the way home, they say, "Now this was wonderful, can we do this?" Took youth to the Oregon Youth Gathering and did that 2 years in a row. And each time on the way home, kids said, "Can we do this again?" Or, "Can we just go by ourselves sometime and rent a hotel overnight?" So it really spurs the imagination of the kids. And they do respond by saying, you know, what some of their needs are. Yes?
What is the age pyramid that you work with? Do you lose them by 18, or the 18-year-olds become peer models for the younger ones? Do they stick around?
I haven't been at it that long. The program isn't that long. I find that the real place of focus, the strong identity, is in the middle school.
Junior high,
yeah. And then high school, there's a residual to that. So I have a strong relationship with 10th and 11th graders. But those are kids that started in middle school, you know, or the relationship was established in middle school. So, and I do hope to get something going in the elementary school.
But this is at the Episcopal school?
No.
Well, this is at the inner city school?
Right. Yeah. The program focus is I have two focuses personally. One is meeting the needs of children who are at highest risk. That's the program objective. My personal objective is that there's an economic and racial division within our country, and we need to bring kids into relationship in order to begin to overcome that. And by the time we're adults, it's really too late. And so that's my personal agenda, and being able to bring those kids into relationship so that they can see when they become managers or whatever relationship, that they're able to not dehumanize each other or write each other off because of their experiences when they were little. To be able to say that, you know, or have to admit to themselves, "I know that that's a human being and not just a color or an economic difference." Yes?
Yeah, I wouldn't, in my experience, I would never write off anybody over 18 or whatever. But, you know, the point is, what do we have to deal with now, and who is here now? And it's so neat to see their own vision change, mm-hmm. just what you're mm-hmm. saying, because of those relationships. It's a little hard for the white person to brand the native as, you know, some stereotype when they've been in fellowship with them, eating, sleeping, going places, relating to them in celebrations of all sorts. So I, you know, I grieve over those who may be lost in some ways of finding, you know, their journey, but I see this other developing. Yeah. So they may not be in program, you know, at these older ages, but they've changed their ideas of what they want in high school and what they want as they, you know, go towards their own new kinds of goals.
Right. And what they can do. My experience is that if a child who's green and one is red, now interact with each other, and they're from different social economic backgrounds, but in their interaction they see that they're the same, and one sees that one is going on to be a doctor, then the other is able to say, then I can potentially be a doctor too. And that will be some of that sense of esteem that will help that kid to break through some of those barriers that he wouldn't normally, or she wouldn't normally break through. Another thing that I would say that's powerful in my experience in having worked with Oregon Episcopal School, which is, you know, overwhelmingly a white school, is how insecure those kids are in relating to kids who are poor or who are ethnically different, and the power that, and being able to put them, give them a relationship where they are able to say, I really am real, that it's not just because my parents are wealthy that I'm wonderful, but this person who's different than me thinks I'm wonderful too. So that's a real affirmation that those affluent white kids need in having that relationship with kids who are different from themselves.
Yeah, we think we're doing so much in this direction, but the power is what comes back.
Yeah, it really is reciprocal. It really is a peer relationship.
Yeah.
It's reciprocal. Yes.
Kelly, it seems to me that you have built a magnificent vehicle for change. It would be a tragedy if we allowed it to run out of gas.
Yeah, and I'm not dependent on you folks at all. Not really. I'm dependent on God. And if it runs out of gas, I'm not worried about that.
Because we can be a conduit for God and help him fill up your gas tank.
Right, and that's your responsibility.
Thank
My
you.
Responsibility is to present the opportunity.
Right,
yeah. Is someone else?
I got a question.
Yes.
With you talk about mentors. Should mentors be close to the age of the children? Can a 50 or 60-year-old be a mentor to the children? And then if you go and just hang out, should more be expected of you than just to hang out and listen, or what?
I think hanging out is fine. And if that's what the relationship is, that's what it is. But some of the best mentorships, well, one of the best mentorships I've seen has been a 60-year-old man who knew his, and he was a math tutor. And the kids really respected that here was an African-American adult that knew his stuff and was there for him. You know, my own experience, I didn't know my grandfather. So, that kind of projection, I think, is really helpful. But I think the best mentors are the ones who are fine with just hanging out with a kid.